Barbarella, Sacadella, never can a fella name or call you.
Jane Fonda was 30 years old when she made Barbarella, the 1968 camp classic about a space-traveling bombshell. Blonde, of course. Fonda's famous zero-gravity striptease during the opening credits made her, for a while, one of the most fantasized about women in the world, somewhat to her dismay.
Are you typical of Earth women?
I'm about average.
Right. And it. Out. And it.
Well, average, she isn't. Jane Fonda's had more careers than most people have in a lifetime. Actress, activist, feminist, filmmaker, and, of course, fitness guru. She looks back on it all in a new memoir, My Life So Far. Now, the book is, in many ways, the story not just of Jane Fonda, but of her body, especially of the many years she spent struggling with eating disorders and self-hatred. Steve Paulson asked her where that came from.
Where it always comes from, early childhood. It doesn't matter what's real. Objectively, what matters is what you feel about yourself. And my father let me know through his wives that he thought I was fat. It didn't matter when I was young and wrestling and climbing trees and pulling ticks out of my neck, but when I started to enter adolescence, then it seemed to matter a lot. And being thin and having good hair was real important. And I didn't feel good enough, and I didn't feel perfect, and so I just became disembodied.
I've seen pictures of you when you were a girl, and you were not fat, but that didn't matter.
I was fluffy, but not fat. But I, you know, in the course of writing the book, I've talked to Fonda cousins, girls, all a lot of women in the Fonda family, and they said that generationally, the Fonda men were obsessed about women being thin, and two of my father's five wives were bulimic.
And then you became bulimic yourself.
I did, yeah.
And for a long time, right? And this started when you were in boarding school?
That's right. It started in boarding school, and it lasted through two marriages and two children into my early 40s. And then I stopped. But I was like a dry drunk in the sense that I wasn't engaging in my addiction, but I hadn't addressed the reasons I was doing it. I hadn't healed.
So when you looked at yourself in the mirror, what didn't you like?
I liked my hands. That was about it. I've always had a beautiful small waist, but I didn't like the rest of me.
You didn't like your face?
No, I did not like me. And that has a real impact on your relationships, because if you think you're not good enough to be loved, if you think that you have to be perfect in order to be loved, then you're going to hide those parts of yourself that you think are not lovable, and only bring part of yourself to the table of your relationships. And you can't have a relationship that way. It took me a long time.
Were the stakes higher for you because you were a movie star? I mean, was it even that much more important to look perfect?
My addiction would always get worse when there was a lot of pressure on me to be partially clothed or outright naked in movies or modeling. Whenever my body became the issue, then the pressure was to be real thin. So it would always get worse.
Well, you tell some horrible stories as well about your times working in Hollywood. For instance, your first movie, Tall Story, and how Jack Warner made you wear falsies. And the director of that movie suggested you get your jaw broken and reset and some of your back teeth pulled out so you had a more chiseled look.
Played on all my insecurities, and it was a miserable experience. It was my first movie, Tall Story, and I vowed I'd never go back to Hollywood. But I ended up going back because the director, a family friend, Josh Logan, I found out was going to sell my contract to Ray Stark, and I didn't want to be bought. So I said, will you let me pay you back over the few years? So I had to go back to work to pay for my freedom.
Now, once you became an anti-war activist, you changed the way you looked and the way you dressed. And as you describe it in your book, you say that you no longer dressed to look sexy. And that infuriated a lot of men.
I know, it was amazing. And some women. It was amazing to me. I realized that wearing the very short miniskirts that I used to wear and almost see-through blouses and stuff, which was how I dressed when I was married to Roger Vadim, who directed Barbarella, and when he and I split up and I became an activist, it made women uncomfortable, and I didn't want to do that. so I stopped wearing makeup, and I gave away all my possessions, and I pretty much lived out of a duffel bag. I had a couple of pairs of jeans and army boots and a khaki jacket, and that was about it. And articles began to appear, William Buckley and others saying, you know, plain Jane, doesn't she ever look in the mirror anymore? I wanted to say to him, but didn't know, I don't exactly. I'd looked into the mirror altogether too much in my life. But there were women also who were furious that I didn't live up to their expectations as a movie star and glamorous and everything.
Now, one of the big surprises for people who had watched you over the years, I mean, watched you as an actor, as a highly visible anti-war activist, is that then you became a fitness guru. That somehow just didn't seem to fit. I suppose there are two ways that you can look at that workout. I mean, one is that this may have represented a fundamental shift in the way you thought about your body, that you were more comfortable in it, or maybe it was just another attempt to create a perfect body.
Well, I had stopped being an addict, a food addict, a year or two before I started the workout. And like a lot of people who are moving out of an addiction, I replaced it with exercise, because exercise is a great way to kind of control your body. But I didn't realize at the time it was also the beginning of my moving back into my body. Moving that way to that kind of music sort of got me to become re-embodied a little bit again. I also realized, and it's what allowed me to feel okay about it, was how empowering it was for women. I've included one letter among, oh God, I got thousands of letters from a woman in my book who talks about how it changed her life. And so much had nothing to do with how you look or being fit. It had to do with how you feel about yourself. And as we started talking on this interview now, you know, how you feel about yourself is what's important. And I like the fact that the workout could change how people felt about themselves, women in particular.
What do you say to younger women who may be going through what you went through many years ago, who have felt this shame and self-hatred about their bodies? What kind of advice can you offer them?
I try to deconstruct the causes of it. It's called patriarchy. I try to help girls understand that this is part of a paradigm that is very toxic to humanity, both to men and women, but this paradigm that tells women that they have to be perfect and they have to look a certain way. And I talk about the kind of anxiety that that causes in them, and that they need to understand it's not some individual issue that they have, that we have to grow up to resist. We have to become resistors. And even more important, that mothers and fathers have to escort perfection to the door, slam the door, lock it, don't let the notion of perfection in, stop talking about dieting. And fathers, don't say to your girls that they are fat or too thin or too flat-chested or anything like that. Just love them for their humanity.
What about mothers who still worry a lot about how they look and, you know, who talk about that around the house?
I think that it's not good. I think that they have to not do it. I spoke in Bozeman, Montana recently to a conference of high school girls, and I found out that a mother had given her 16-year-old child breast implants for her birthday. You know, we have to check ourselves. We have to say, why? What does this mean? Why are we doing this? And the fact that I have been a victim of it myself, I think, is helpful for girls and women. And the fact that, you know, my wrinkles show, I don't have the photos touched up in my book, and I think it's important for young people to know what growing old looks like and to not be afraid of it.
Do you think people, women in particular, are more obsessed with body image now than they were, say, when you were first starting out?
Yes, I do, because, you know, now there are all these mutilating ways that women can, you know, they can do liposuction and they can carve up on themselves and all those sorts of things. That didn't exist when I was coming up. So, you know, I mean, I have so many friends who, if they have one thing wrong with them, they'll go and get it changed, you know, but that's what gives them their character. That's what gives them their uniqueness. And everybody's starting to look alike, and it's scary.
Now, you have lived a very full life. I mean, you've lived lives worthy of several people. But I'm wondering if there's a piece of this. I mean, what we've been talking about, this obsession with body image and how bad it made you feel for so many years. I mean, do you look back at your life and just think, I mean, in that respect, and think, oh, what a waste?
Nothing's a waste. You just have to learn from it. You know, I have a lot going for me. I have a lot of energy. I'm very resilient. So in a way, if we lived in a society that didn't raise men to want women to look a certain way and didn't cause girls to feel they weren't good enough, gosh knows what I could have done with my life. But, you know, I've had the life that I've had, and I think maybe there was a reason for it. And, you know, I think I can be of help now. And I wrote my book because I thought, and I think, and I know now because it's been out for 2 weeks and I'm getting feedback that it could help people.
Jane Fonda talking with Steve Paulson. Fonda's new memoir, My Life So Far, is just out. She's also made her first movie in 15 years, Monster in Law.
Someone pull the sun down, somebody raise the moon.